All right. So hopefully we all are in the place we want to be. We're going to be going over the Ryan White Part A service categories, and we're going to be doing that. We're going to do that by going over the HRSA definition. So the definition that the federal government has set in legislation for the service category, as well as for HRSA, around giving us some guidance around how those services are should be provided and to whom. And then also a very brief, some bullet points around documented need for those services from our people living with HIV in our region. So we won't be digging into super deep into EPI or needs assessment. That will be another conversation, but I just wanted to provide some context when we talk about the services, about what need might look, what the need does look like in our EMA. And because of some delays in data, and obviously this pandemic has made people working from home, and some data we can't get because the people aren't in their offices to do it for us. So most of the stuff's going to be a little old, but it's only, you know, a year or two old. It's not like 100 years old. So we'll just do our best, but it'll give us a idea of what the need is like. So to start us off, before we start working our way through the service categories, and we're going to go through the ones that are funded by the Planning Council and the ones that aren't funded. We're just going to go down the list just so everyone has an understanding of all of them, just so you know. But before we do all that, we're just going to kind of hit the highlights of the fact that Ryan White is payer of last resort. And so there's a couple things related to this that are very important that we all keep in mind. One, it's designed, the program itself is designed to serve people who are uninsured, uninsurable and underinsured. And by people, I mean people living with HIV. And all other private, state, local, and federal funds must be utilized before Ryan White funds are. So if there's another federal program that can provide a service, or if an individual's insurance, whether that's public insurance like Medicaid or Medicare, or private insurance through the marketplace or their job, then that has to be, the insurance coverage has to be used. And so, as well as if there's some other federal program like a mental health or substance use treatment program that's paid for the state or really anyone else. And the very key line, which is that Ryan White program is not insurance. And I think sometimes that is confusing for people. It isn't an insurance. Mari, do you have anything you want to add?
No, I mean, I think that you pretty much covered it. The only thing that I would say about payer of last resort is that that pretty much is a stipulation and a requirement from the federal government, and that is the reason why we must adhere to it, and that's about it.
All right, thank you. So, yes, thank you. Mari kind of keyed up this slide. So, much like the payer of last resort, requirement that's set by federal legislation and define it. So these service categories also come from the feds. So what is allowable under the Ryan White Part A program as far as service categories is all determined by the federal government. And this would be both Congress in terms of the legislation as well as the Health and Resources Services Administration, HRSA, which is under the Health and Human Services big umbrella at the federal government. And so locally, ACO, which we call the recipient, because it is a recipient of the Ryan White grant, Part A grant, and the Planning Council work together to determine the needs and implement appropriate services with the resources available. And so that means along with services that are allowable with Ryan White funds, according to those service category definitions, as well as like we were saying about payer of last resort, these decisions have to be made in the context of the, you know, all of the region and what other resources and services and money are available, as well as community need, because there may be services that in certain communities are more needed and in others they aren't. And just as I said, not all the eligible service categories are currently funded in our EMA. And so these decisions are based on documented need. And like we said, other resources available, which is a refrain you will hear a lot, and current policies. And so just to give you something to check out later is that all these definitions are summarized from the official HRSA, HIV/AIDS Bureau Policy Clarification 1602, and probably all of our planning council members, at least the ones that have been around for a while, are aware of this. And we can definitely email this out, as well as it will be, if it's not already on our website, which I believe it is, we can make sure everyone sees it. But that is something you should at least review and have an idea of what it is. But that really goes very specifically about the service categories and what that means. And so that's where these definitions came from. They are, I will say they are summarized, because within the official definitions, there's some stuff about exactly how things are supposed to be provided and guidance to the recipient as far as like monitoring and contracting, et cetera, that aren't really within the purview of the planning council. So those are kind of removed just to help clarity for people can understand. And within this slide deck too, we're going to talk a lot about what the consumer survey from 2017 told us about reported needs of people living with HIV. And so I just wanted to give a background for people who aren't familiar with it, you know, where this comes from. So this survey is done every 4 or 5 years by the Office of HIV Planning, where I work. And I just realized I didn't introduce myself. My name is Nicole Johns. I work, I'm the senior health planner at the Office of HIV Planning. And as well as Mari's been speaking, she's the director of the office. And our job is to support the activities of the Planning Council. And this is one of the ways we're doing it. And so we help the Planning Council conduct this survey every 4 or 5 years. We try to get as great a most representative sample of people who are using Ryan White services, as well as other people living with HIV within the EMA. We ask them questions about who they are, where they live, services they need, any challenges, health challenges otherwise they have. This last one, we asked about incarceration history and other comorbidities, which we'll talk about as we move forward. So here's some highlights from that. There is a long report you can read about this, and I would be happy to talk about anyone about the results at another time. And there's definitely other presentations and such on our website about it that you can learn more about the survey and results. But the needs around services are going to be captured in this presentation. So we had 409 respondents from all over the EMA. I will tell you that those were pretty close to representing the epidemic in terms of geography. Our sample did skew a little older, over 50, but also if you know anything about the HIV epidemic in our region, that we, especially those who are in the Ryan White system, that still holds to be true, but it is true that we had an undersampling of younger people. So just keep that in mind as we move forward and talk about needs. Most of the folks who responded were engaged in HIV care and on treatment. Almost all were satisfied with their HIV medical care. And by almost all, I mean 90 some percent and medical case management that they were receiving. Most everyone received both of those services, but less received medical case management for many reasons. One, they didn't feel like they needed it. And two, maybe they didn't have access to it yet. And the most common barriers reported were not having enough money for basic needs, insecure or lack of housing, lack of reliable transportation, and comorbidities, which are other health conditions, which include mental health diagnoses like depression and anxiety, but also diabetes, arthritis, heart disease, asthma, et cetera. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. So here's just a little bit of numbers. Just to ground us in, you know, how many folks are we talking about when we talk about the Ryan White system locally? So, and thank you, Jessica, just gave us these numbers from last year, just yesterday or earlier this week. So there are approximately 17,730 clients who received Part A funded Ryan White services last year. And this does not include some programs that just hadn't reported them yet, but it's just a couple hundred people and they may be already captured in the 1700. So just to give you, that's why it says approximately. And if you wanna look at the number of people who received all Ryan White services within the EMA, you're gonna look at that 19,607 clients. And so that you'll see that where that number comes from. And then to give you further context, there are about 26,793 people living with HIV in the EMA as of 2017. So you can see that a large portion of people living with HIV are within, receiving services from our Ryan White funded providers. Mari, do you want to say anything?
No.
Okay.
You're good.
So let's start. Let's jump in. So we're going to jump in. And generally, these slides will be set up. On the left-hand column will be the definition of the service. And on the right-hand side is going to be some information, either from the consumer survey or mostly from ACO, either epidemiological data or data around services or need. So ambulatory outpatient care is our services and diagnostic therapeutic services that provide directly to a client, so directly to a person living with HIV by a licensed healthcare provider. And so you can see the list there. This is, you know, testing, labs, any kind of preventative care, screening that someone might need, helping manage any medication, treatment adherence, you know, education around your health and prevention issues. And so this is really the focus on not emergency care. It's not inpatient care. It's outpatient care. So it's like going to your doctor and, you know, what happens within that exam room and any test related to that examination that might be done or any other kinds of screening. So in the consumer survey, we asked people if they had needed HIV care in the last previous 12 months and weren't able to get it. And 7% of the respondents said that that was true for them. Comorbidities and chronic health conditions are very common among people who living with HIV, especially people as they get older, which makes sense because that's true for all human beings as we get older, that aging brings with it diseases and other health conditions. Incarceration is common for the people who responded to the survey and has impacted engagement and retention in HIV care for them. And I will say that that question around incarceration asks if people had been incarcerated since their diagnosis with HIV. So just think about it in that context. So whatever that time period might be for the individual. So it may be recent, it may be, you know, a decade or more previous. And then prevention services were not offered. And this was reported by clients. So we asked people if we had a list of prevention related HIV prevention and other prevention, like sexual health prevention services, if they were offered by their HIV medical provider. And most people reported that either none of them or very few of them were offered to them or provided to them. 63% of the EMA's people living with HIV were enrolled in Medicare and or Medicaid in 2017. And I will just note that some of these things are going to be in blue, and that's mostly just to bring your attention to them, just because I think this is a really important thing to understand in the context of Ryan White being payer of last resort. And that's just Medicare and Medicaid. That doesn't include other ways that people are insured. And 18% of positive people in the EMA were without insurance anytime in 2017. So those two are important. And at any time means, you know, it could be months, the whole year, a couple of days, whatever, but at any time that they were uninsured. And so we need to also note where there are significant barriers to people accessing and staying in HIV care. And we know that these are barriers for minority youth and transgender individuals, and that's reflected in disparities in retention and care and viral load suppression compared to other subpopulations. So compared to other groups within the EMA, minority youth and transgender individuals do have disparities in retention and care and viral load suppression. So that's something we want to keep in mind as we move forward and plan services for next year and then into the future. Who are the people who may have additional barriers or have additional disparities to access? Medical case management. Is the provision of a range of client-centered activities which focus on improving health outcomes. And so this is really the key phrase here, is that medical case management's focus is on improving health outcomes for people living with HIV. And so it includes a number of activities. Here's some of them. listed, including, you know, doing treatment adherence counseling, helping to make sure that there's access to health and supportive services and there's a continuity of care, and really just doing helping a client with advocacy, and including self-advocacy, and making sure that they are receiving the supports and the medical care that they need. And so we know that people who have medical case management tend to be more adherent to HIV medical care than people who do not have medical case management. And in 2017, 90% of the new, so people who are entering medical case management, clients were linked to medical care, and 80% of clients who attended a medical visit in the first half of the year then returned for a follow-up visit in the second half of the year. And so that's talking about not only linkage to HIV care, but also being retained in it. And so those are some key words that we're going to talk a lot about as we move forward. So dental care is always a big topic, especially when we talk about needs. So it is, in this case, in Ryan White, this includes outpatient, diagnostic, preventative, and therapeutic services by a dental health professional. And like I said, it's one of the top three reported services as far as need goes. And that's because some people do not have dental insurance. It's common for people not to have dental insurance. Dental care can be very expensive. And so as you can see, 30% of our survey respondents did not have dental insurance. And even those folks who do, there can still be barriers to access, including getting appointments, being able to afford the cost sharing and copays, long waits for appointments. There's a lot of different things that can come up. So local pharmaceutical assistance, we're going to talk about a few programs related to access to medications, and it's important that we understand the differences, and I am going to probably rely on Mari to help us remember the differences because they can seem subtle, but they're not. So together we'll figure it out. So a local pharmaceutical assistance program is, you know, operated within this Ryan White. The RWHAP is the Ryan White HIV AIDS program, just so we can have even longer acronyms, Part A, and it's a supplemental means of providing medication assistance. And I think that supplemental word is important. And that is when, and this is why it's in blue, when an ADAP, which is the state-run program, which in Pennsylvania we call SBBP, and in New Jersey is ADDP, when that has a restricted formulary, so that means a restricted list of drugs that are covered under it, a waiting list, and or restricted financial eligibility, like if there's only, you know, a smaller subset of people who could access it due to financial eligibility. In our EMA's case, both New Jersey and Pennsylvania do not meet either any of these. We have very wide formularies, some of the best in the country, as well as no waiting lists and pretty, inclusive financial eligibility. And a recent change to this program is that it used to be a 30-day supply of meds, and now it's down to 14 because that more meets the needs, because this is sort of a in-between, right? This is for helping people in sort of a I don't want to say emergency basis, but like in a, like getting onto insurance or some other time where that little, it's more of a bridge. That's probably a good way to think about it. And utilization has been decreasing over time because of access to ADAP, SBBP, and also health insurance as of late, especially after we have the ACA and expansion of who can be covered under Medicaid. So if you want to look here, you can see under the consumer survey, we asked people like how did they pay for their prescriptions? And so you can see, or who covered it, and you can see that a lot of it was Medicare Part D and SBBP or ADDP, other insurance and patients assistance. So you can kind of see the breadth of that. Mari, did you want to add anything?
I would just clarify that essentially the individuals who usually wind up tapping into this service are individuals who more often than not are new to the system. They're new clients. They don't have medications generally, and this is to try and make sure that they have access as soon as possible to the medication, to, you know, antiretrovirals, etc., and some of the other medications that may fall on this list. But that's pretty much the reason why you will see that ADAP, because they have sped up their process, it's not as long a wait as it used to be in the past. So people are actually obtaining medications and access to those services a lot sooner than they did before.
Thank you. So mental health services are provided on an outpatient basis, and it includes assessments and screening and treatment and counseling. The key here is that it's be provided by a licensed mental health professional, and that includes psychiatrists, psychologists, and licensed clinical social workers. So really, you want to think about that this is an outpatient mental health care provided by licensed professionals. I think as most of us understand, access to mental health is very important, mental health services, and as well as there being a lot of people living with HIV who have been diagnosed with mental health disorders. And you can see that in our respondents from the consumer survey, that 63.5% of the respondents reported having ever been diagnosed with at least one mental health disorder. And 31% reported using mental health services ever, and then 10% reported needing but not receiving mental health services in the last year. And approximately 13,000 people in our EMA who are living with HIV may have a mental health disorder. So that is an estimate. So I'm seeing questions. I'm just going to pop in before I move on because I don't want anyone to think I'm ignoring your questions. So the survey is only to the question about receiving a survey. We only do the survey once every 5 years for a set period of time. We do not have a survey active at this moment, but will in the next year or two. So we can make sure that whoever wants to participate can. And I see Dina's asking about if a person can't get an appointment for a month, can they get another 14-day supply? I don't know the answer to that question, but it's something we could find out. It would depend on their insurance status, right, Mari?
Yeah, if for whatever reason, there have been instances where people have gotten additional medications because either the, like you said, they couldn't get an appointment or something else came up, and that's actually going back and informing the case manager so that they can actually provide the service. We also pay for, and I don't want to screw this up, but we also pay for medications under emergency financial assistance as well.
Yes.
And the thing that I probably should have added at the beginning of this is that when the documents that we will be sending out will actually break down the number of clients, how much money, who used it, et cetera, over the past 5 years. So that is coming to you. I'm just adding all of that information in, and I just haven't gotten to it. I haven't gotten everything that I need yet, and you should receive it sometime next week.
And you're speaking to Planning Council members?
Yes.
Yes. And we are going to post all of it to our website as it becomes available. We can talk about this at the end. So let's just put a pin in that. Yeah.
Right.
And there actually is going to be some numbers in this presentation to give people an idea of how many clients use each of these services. So that's at the end. So we'll get there. So medical nutrition therapy is based on a nutritional plan developed by a registered dietitian or other licensed nutritional professional. So that's really the key here. It's really about someone's nutritional needs based on their health. And so it can include the evaluation and screenings and assessments, as well as food and nutritional supplements, et cetera, that is based on a medical provider's recommendation and all the education and counseling that would go along with those kinds of dietary changes. And these services can be provided to individuals or group settings. So it could be more of a group, like if people were learning to manage their diabetes or heart disease, et cetera. And it can also, can be used to help things outside of HIV. So diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, all these other dietary and nutritionally related things. To get to the consumer survey, you can see that we had like 48% of respondents reported being diagnosed with high blood pressure and high cholesterol for 30% and diabetes for 19%. I will say that in general, I compared these to the general population and they are all higher than the general population. And 10% reported needing medical nutrition therapy, but not receiving it in the last year. Whenever it says that, it's in the last year. Okay, substance use treatment. There's a lot on this slide, and I apologize. It's kind of packed in, but I was trying to make everything one slide at each service to keep everything on one together. So substance abuse outpatient care. And so the key is we're talking about outpatient care in this particular definition, which includes harm reduction and behavioral health counseling associated with substance use disorder. It can be outpatient drug-free treatment and counseling. It can include medication-assisted therapy, neuropsychiatric pharmaceuticals, and also some relapse prevention, and highlighted that syringe access services are allowable under the service category to the extent that they comport or follow with current appropriations law, which would be funding law and applicable HHS guidance. So that's federal guidance, including any that may come specifically from the HIV AIDS Bureau or HRSA from the feds. So the key to take away there is that syringe access services are allowable within the Ryan White program. And that is a change from previous times for maybe for folks who haven't seen this update from the last few years. And from the consumer survey, 9% of people noted that they needed substance abuse treatment and they didn't receive it. And 13% had used substance abuse services in the last year, and 10% reported ever being diagnosed with substance use disorder. And we asked just if, you know, anyone, people had ever been diagnosed. And these are some notes just to give us an idea. And some of this data is a little older, but still rings true. So Philadelphia has an increase of diagnoses in people who inject drugs. And that 94% is actually higher than that. I forget the percentage off the top of my head. And if we look at it, we can see, you know, the MMP, which is a medical monitoring project data, and this would be for Philadelphia County only, that in 2015, 2% of the people living with HIV surveyed injected drugs in the last 12 months. You can see that hepatitis C prevalence is really high. At 81% among HIV positive people who inject drugs. And this is from another survey, I always get an HBS wrong. Is it the National HIV Behavioral Surveillance? Is that right, Mari? I always get that one wrong. Yes, okay. And so you can just see that substance use is something that is noted among our EMA's community. And I think we all know this and not surprising to any of us, but here's some data just to back up.
The thing that I would also add to that is that when you say that the syringe access services are allowable, the program costs are allowable. Purchasing syringes and other kinds of paraphernalia associated with it are not allowable costs.
So early intervention services. So this is actually a combination of services rather than a standalone. And in order for this to be, for a program to be funded under the EIS, it has to have all four. It doesn't necessarily mean that the Ryan White program has to fund each of these. And the four are targeted HIV testing, referral services to improve HIV care and treatment, access and linkage to HIV care and treatment, and outreach services in health education and risk reduction. So those are the four key components to this service. But like I said, it doesn't necessarily mean they could be funded in any part of that could be funded under, like if you think about testing, that may get funded from a CDC grant or some other funding, but it has to be within any Ryan White funded in early intervention program. Concurrent rates of HIV and AIDS diagnosis are considerably higher in the Pennsylvania suburban counties than in New Jersey or Philadelphia. And those in Pennsylvania occur mostly in people over 40. And the reason that this is included is because that's showing us that people are living with HIV for a long time before they're getting diagnosed with HIV. And concurrent rates means that the person is diagnosed with HIV and either at the same time or very shortly after are diagnosed with AIDS. So that tells us someone has been living with the HIV infection for a long time. And so we can see that the 35% is more than double what's New Jersey and nearly double what's Philadelphia. So that's just something to note as we talk about regional needs. 22% of those newly diagnosed in 2017 were 13 to 24 years of age, and that's for the whole EMA, not just for Philadelphia. And so we talked about before, there are increased diagnoses among people who inject drugs, and this number is even also wrong, but it's more than that. It's over 100 and something percent.
About 127 or 125%.
Yes.
I think.
And then the Philadelphia Health Department estimates that 10.7% of HIV positive men who have sex with men are not aware of their status. And that estimate was from last year. So just to give you context. So home health care, we're ticking through our list here. Home health care is the provision of services in the home that are appropriate to clients' needs and performed by licensed professionals. So the keys are licensed professionals. This includes, you know, helping people with any prescribed therapeutics, giving specialty care, medical therapies, and it's all administered in the home. 11% of the consumer survey respondents reported using this service, and 11% reported needing but not receiving it in the last 12 months. Over half of the EMA's people who are living with HIV are over 50, and so these services help people age at home, and as well as people who are in recovering from an illness or are rehabilitating from stroke or something else. And the prevalence of other health conditions, particularly in older folks, may create a need for this service over time. As the population of people living with HIV and our EMA is aging, it may be something that is an increased need over as we look to the future for planning. So similar, but not exactly the same, home and community-based health services are provided in an integrated setting appropriate to the client's needs. So that may be mental health, developmental or rehabilitation services, any kind of day treatment or partial hospitalization, that include medical equipment, home health aid services and personal care services in the home, help people just with daily tasks and self-care kinds of things. Again, you'll see that 11% reported using the service in the past 12 months and 12% reported needing it and not getting it. And I will add that in the survey, we didn't use necessarily the official Ryan White program name for the service category because it's hard for people to know what's home community-based health services versus home health services. So we summarized it in a sentence so people would know. And that was true for all the services that maybe weren't obvious, just so people knew exactly what they were answering. And like we said, the EMA's PLWH community is aging, over half or over 50. And the prevalence of other physical and mental health conditions may create a need for folks as they age. Very similar to the last slide. So hospice services are end of life care services for people. And so again, as we see our community of people living with HIV age, this may be considered something that has increased needs over time. So emergency financial assistance, otherwise known as DFA, is limited one-time or short-term payments to assist a client with emergent need. So that's an emergency for paying for things such as utilities, housing, food, transportation, and medications. So like Mari said, in some situations, the DFA may be a more appropriate way for someone to access medications compared to the local pharmaceutical assistance program, just depending on the situation and that person's insurance status and whatever's going on in the moment for them. In the consumer survey, 11% reported having had emergency financial assistance in the last 12 months. And in that we didn't specify that it had to be Ryan White. So that may include some other financial assistance that people may have gotten for utilities or housing or food. And 17% needed financial assistance in the last 12 months, but did not get it. Housing costs and housing insecurity are a burden for folks, especially folks with low or no income. And I think that, as we all know, is a growing concern for the whole local community as housing costs increase. And 71% of the EMA's people living with HIV are at or below 138% of the federal poverty line. And that's about $17,000 a year for an individual. So if you think more than two thirds earn less than that. Medical transportation is really the key to this, is non-emergency transportation that takes people to, helps people access the Ryan White core medical and supportive services. So it's a way to get to medical case management, to mental health services, to a housing council appointment, et cetera, as well as, of course, to doctor's appointments. And again, this would be done in the context of payer of last resort as well. So if someone is covered under Medicaid or Medicare and there's transportation available through those or another insurance program, then those services should be accessed first. And I will note that it is well noted and documented that there are challenges with local providers of the medical transportation. And so it's not just understood, it's not just as simple as that. And that came up a lot in the consumer survey. So 25% of our respondents said that they missed an appointment in the previous year because of transportation problems. That includes just not a lack of transportation, not having a way to get. 25% reported using medical transportation in the last year, and 11% said that they had had it, but I mean, they needed it, but they didn't receive it with some time within the last year. And so when we did some statistical analysis of looking like who's more likely to miss because of transportation challenges, folks who didn't have insurance, people with marketplace plans, so that'd be like private plans that they pay for themselves, not do their jobs, and people covered by Medicaid and Medicare were significantly more likely to have transportation challenges that prevented them from attending medical appointments in the previous 12 months. Housing assistance. In this case, the Ryan White program definition is that this is limited to short-term assistance to support emergency, temporary, or transitional housing. And I think it's really important to remember that this is short-term, and that means that it needs, in following other federal guidance, it's 24 months or less. And and that also, this program not only includes like actual housing, whether that's emergency or temporary or transitional, but also housing related referral services, assessments, advocacy, helping people, you know, access housing at all and you know, finding placement, et cetera. It can't be provided on a permanent basis. This is very important. This is not like HOPWA. It's quite different. And it also cannot be used to help people with mortgage payments. And so that's just something that's important to remember. And so in the EMA, Housing Services Fund, emergency short-term rental assistance. So like DFA, like when people get help with their rent under DFA, it comes out of this line item. Supportive services to get housing, group housing, and legal assistance around housing. So that's the advocacy piece of like helping people access or maintain housing. The consumer survey, housing costs and housing insecurity are a burden, and especially for people with low or no income. 14.5% reported staying with friends or family at the time of the survey. 2% were living in a shelter. 1.1% said they were in some kind of transitional housing, which includes halfway housings or a drug treatment program. And a little less than 1% reported living on the street at the time of the survey. 10.6%, which is 1,779 people received Ryan White services and have unstable or temporary housing. So 10% of the Ryan White client population has unstable or temporary housing. And the health department estimates that there are 2,675 people living with HIV experiencing homelessness in 2015. And 71%, as we said, of the EMA's people living with HIV are at or below 138% of the federal poverty line. So you can see that the pressures of increasing housing costs and not increasing incomes, and actually now, of course, in this time, people losing income, we're going to see possibly a greater need for this housing assistance more than we already see. I think there was a question in the chat. Does it cover LogistiCare? Yes, LogistiCare is exactly an example of another provider of transportation that should be accessed before the Ryan White program transportation is accessed. However, I will, like as I noted, challenges and barriers around receiving transportation from that provider have been well documented. And so hopefully as we move forward, people can find ways to still access transportation, but that is not a LogistiCare isn't paid for by the Ryan White program. So it's Medicaid and Medicare. Mari, do you want to say anything else about that?
No.
We'll be happy to talk about that offline. Food bank and home delivered meals refers to the provision of actual food. So it's an important thing. So hot meals or voucher programs to purchase food. And so it can also include personal hygiene, cleaning products, and water and purification and filtration systems where water safety is a concern. 30% of the respondents from the survey reported using food banks or home delivered meals in the last 12 months. And I think that makes sense in the context of when we're talking about folks' income. And 10% reported needing but not getting food bank or home delivered meals in the last 12 months. And like you said, there's the income there as well. So legal and other professional services. Now this is a change that maybe for some people seems a little new. It used to just be legal services, and when that policy clarification notice was issued, that 1602 I talked about at the very beginning of today, they added some other services. So we can take a minute to kind of talk about what they are. So this includes legal services that involving legal matters related to or arising from a person's HIV disease, which would include assistance with public benefits, interventions necessary to ensure people's access to benefits, helping people with power of attorney, living wills, custody arrangements, that kind of thing. But also the other professional services includes income tax preparation services to assist clients in filing federal tax returns that are required by the Affordable Care Act for all individuals receiving premium tax credits. So that'd be, for folks who buy their insurance through those state or federal marketplaces. It's a way you have to file tax returns to show that you earned the amount of income you claimed in order to get that subsidy from the federal government. So this service can help provide that tax preparation for clients. It also helps access to benefits, access to benefits, particularly SSDI, is essential support for many people living with HIV in our EMA. In the consumer survey, we saw 12% of folks saying they needed legal services in the last 12 months, but didn't get that. And I will say that that may include folks who needed other kinds of legal services that Ryan White legal services couldn't provide. We did not get specifically into what their legal needs might be. So just to keep that as of note. So for instance, if someone needed any kind of criminal, legal, or that kind of thing, the Ryan White services doesn't cover that. So outreach. Go ahead, Mari.
The question, the answer is yes.
What's the question?
It's the AIDS Law Project. I'm sorry. She wanted to know if it was the Law Project.
Yes.
In Philadelphia. And the answer is yes, that is who it is. I would also add that for legal, they also oversee a lot of the housing issues that people face, discrimination, et cetera. So that's also a component of that.
Yes, as well as in New Jersey as well, South Jersey.
Yes, sorry. That's okay. And the PA counties.
Yes. It's important. Thanks for that. It's a good question. So outreach services is really working to identify people who don't know that their HIV status and then linking them to appropriate medical care. It also includes information and education and re-engaging people who know their status but maybe who have been lost to HIV care. And so we're going to see that, 12% of folks reported using a service to help them get back into HIV medical care or back into care helping them initially or after a time away, and 8% reported needing this kind of help and not receiving it. And so one of the key points in Philadelphia is to say that half of all people living with HIV under 24 do not know that they are HIV positive, and that's the estimate from Philadelphia Department of Public Health. So respite care, we're getting through the list, I promise. So respite care is the provision of periodic respite care. So the key is this is, you know, as needed on a periodic basis in community or home-based settings that includes non-medical assistance. And this is designed to provide care for an HIV infected client to relieve the primary caregiver responsible for the day-to-day care of an adult or a minor living with HIV. So this is to allow the caregiver of a person living with HIV to go do appointments or do other things. And it's on a periodic basis. In the consumer survey, we see that only a small percentage of people reported using this service in the last 12 months, 2%, and some reported needing assistance with adults or children they care for in order to access services for themselves. So psychosocial support services are provided to groups or individuals, and it can include support and counseling services. And you'll see here the list of some of those things. So it can be HIV support groups, nutrition counseling, pastoral care, bereavement counseling, counseling around abuse or neglect. The funds in Ryan White program can't be used for any kind of social or recreational activities. And so for the consumer survey, the need for social support and connection was mentioned frequently, especially for older respondents. 30% reported attending support groups in the previous 12 months, and 9% reported needing but not attending support groups in the previous 12 months. And I will say those support groups would include any kind of support group, not just a support group funded by Ryan White. Or even necessarily be HIV specific. And literature shows us how important social support is for health and well-being. It's particularly around looking at social isolation, particularly for people as we age, that this is really important for health, and lack of social connection can deteriorate a person's health and well-being over time. It's been said that social isolation is even more harmful than smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. Health education and risk reduction is education to clients living with HIV about HIV transmission and how to reduce the risk of transmission, as well as including health literacy, treatment adherence, and really talking about health care coverage options, you know, for insurance, as well as PrEP for partners and treatment as prevention. So it's a whole host of health education. And in a consumer survey, we have 4.3% of sexually active respondents said their HIV negative partner was on PrEP, and 15.6% said that their HIV negative partner was not taking PrEP. And this would be relating to people understanding risk reduction. And then their HIV medical care information about PrEP was offered to 16.6% of the sample, and disclosure support to 13.8%. And even among people living with HIV who reported sexual and drug using behaviors, less than half were offered any harm reduction, STD testing, or other prevention interventions in HIV medical care. And I will say that this is all self-reported by the survey respondents. So the AIDS Drug Assistance Program is a state-administered program. I mentioned it before, which in Pennsylvania is SBBP. In New Jersey, it's called ADDP. And so it's access to FDA-approved medications to low-income clients with HIV who have no other coverage or limited health coverage. And so this is on here because it is a Part B program, but Part A programs are eligible to also fund, you know, at, what's the word I want to say?
They can support.
Support, other- that's the word, thank you. Can support the state programs through allocating money to it. And so this would be particularly in states where access to the ADAP program is limited. Not the case in our EMA for either PA or New Jersey. So it's not something that we fund or support in the Part A as of now. And you can see there again how people are accessing their medications or paying for their medications. And some of this will overlap because some people can use more than one thing. So child care is for intermittent child care services. So this would be to help someone who is, you know, needs to go to an appointment to watch their child, you know, or their grandchild so that they can go take care of a medical appointment or coming to, you know, planning council meetings or support groups or other training. So but it's not going to be like an ongoing child care for someone to like exit, go to work or something else that would happen regularly. And so 10% of respondents said they needed childcare but didn't receive it in the previous 10 years. And 4% said that they had used childcare in the previous 12 months. And we know that lack of childcare is a significant barrier to HIV treatment and other services for people who take care of children. So health insurance premium cost sharing assistance is a mouthful. And this is a way that Part A programs may consider providing health insurance premiums and cost sharing assistance. And it's often done through the state's ADAP program. That's how I think the vast majority of it is done. And so it can pay for both health insurance premiums that will ensure that a person has comprehensive HIV outpatient ambulatory health services and pharmacy benefits and will provide a full range to folks, and that it can also help pay for cost sharing. And that'd be like co-pays and deductibles on behalf of the client who's insured. In the consumer survey, 10% of people said they didn't get medical care in the previous 12 months because they couldn't afford a copay or deductible. As we've said a few times, 71% of the EMAs, people living with HIV, are at or below this 138% of the federal poverty line, which would be the reason we note this. I should have said this before, because that is the financial eligibility cutoff for Medicaid. So if folks are below that, they are eligible for Medicaid. And if they're above that, they wouldn't be and would have other health insurance. And so 18% of folks were uninsured at any time in 2017. So we asked a question in the survey about people having challenges related to out-of-pocket costs. And so we saw people who were uninsured, those with employer-based coverage, and the self-insured, and people with ACA market plans, Medicare-covered individuals, and those covered by Medicaid. So pretty much almost everybody were significantly more likely to have challenges related to out-of-pocket costs than people covered under other types of insurance, which would be good question. What would even be included, I guess, in there? So it's just to see that this challenge, I would say, is like pretty common across insurance types. Linguistic services provide interpretation and translation, and that includes both written and spoken to eligible clients. And we saw in the survey, 4% of respondents reported not receiving medical care or other services in the previous 12 months because of language barriers. And our EMA has a number of non-English speaking populations, and most HIV-related health information and service information is only in English and occasionally in Spanish. So there are some equity issues there. Non-medical case management is different than medical case management, and not just in name. And the difference is important for us to understand. So non-medical case management services provide guidance and assistance in accessing medical, social, community, legal, financial, and other needed services. And it has as their objective providing guidance and assistance in improving access to needed services. So whereas, as we remember, medical case management is really focusing on improving health outcomes. That is like the focus and purpose of medical case management. And non-medical case management is really focused on access to services and whatever they may be. It can seem like a very slight difference, but it's an important difference in terms of these definitions. And rehabilitation services are provided by licensed professionals to improve or manage clients' quality of life and make sure they have a capacity for self-care. So this includes physical and occupational therapy. So in the consumer survey, we saw 11% both reporting they had used it in the past 12 months, and then 11% saying they needed it but didn't receive it in the last 12 months. And I see a question from Daniel. Is that the MAUD cutoff, the 138%? I do not believe that is MAUD is the, what is the acronym? It's Medical Assistance for Working, what's the D? I can't remember. I do not believe that's the mod cutoff, but we can find out. I believe the mod income cutoff is higher than that. If someone else knows the answer, if they could like pop it in the chat, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, the annual limit for mod is $39,100. And I am looking for medical assistance for workers with disabilities. That's what the D is.
Thank you. I should have guessed. So we'll move on to substance abuse services, and this is residential. So the facts on the right are exactly the same as the facts for the outpatient. But the difference here is that this is residential services. So this is something someone's going to stay in treatment setting for some period of time. But it includes the harm reduction, behavioral counseling, medication therapy, assisted therapy, other pharmaceuticals, detox. But the detox is only covered if it's offered at a separate licensed residential setting. And there's a lot more to that detox question that we're going to get into today. But really the key note is that this would be a place somebody would stay rather than an outpatient setting. So referral for health and supportive services, it will direct a client to need a core medical or supportive services, any type of communication. And this currently in the EMA funds the health information line at ACO's client services unit. So, but it main purpose is to help people access services that they need. So here are some numbers that we just got actually to show you the service utilization from last year. And I have a little thing over my over my screen so I can see it all the way. So you'll see on the left column is the service. On the right column is a number of unduplicated clients. So that means, you know, a client may access a service a number of times over the year, but they're only going to be counted once in this. And this is for Part A services, I believe. Yes. Oh, sorry, everyone. I'll put it back. Just so you can get an idea of the numbers of people we're talking about when we talk about services. And of course, you're only going to see on here the services that are currently funded with Part A money in the EMA. But this is to give you an idea of how many people are served. Thank you. And Jessica said, yes, these are for Part A and for services funded by Part A, as well as the Minority AIDS Initiative funding for the EMA. So this is the whole EMA. So Philadelphia, PA counties, and New Jersey. So I just wanted to show that because I know sometimes, like Mari said, like we will be giving more in-depth information per each service category around use as well as funding as we move forward in preparation for allocations. But this is a giving you some ideas around it before you see some of those dollars and cents money. So now we have time. I'm sorry. If we have time for questions, if folks want to have some or discussion. And Mari, did you have something to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that as you were going through the discussion about the services and we were talking about the consumer survey results, when we did the survey, we did not try to ask people whether or not they knew that the service that they were receiving was funded by Part A, B, C, D, or F, or whether or not it was funded by some other, you know, entity or insurance. We wanted to basically find out who was using a service that was one of the services that we can provide in this EMA. So for certain things that we do not fund, you probably saw that there were places where people said that where Nicole said X percent of individuals said that they utilized the service. That's because that service could have been paid for by some other funding stream other than Part A. Or it could have been paid for by their insurance. So I just wanted to try and like add that piece to the discussion before we actually moved into any additional questions, because I think that that might have been slightly confusing.
Thank you. That's important too. Because you can't compare that then to say that, right, we don't know who paid for it. So are there, we can open it up for questions or comments. Either raise your hand or pop it into the chat and I will share it. Or if you're like, I don't even know how to raise my hand, you can unmute yourself and ask the question. I don't believe nobody has a question or anything to say.
Yes, I do. I got a question. Yes, I do.
All right. Come on, Dina.
Okay. So, wait a minute. I wrote them down. Hold on. I had to move. Wait, I had to get to my computer. Okay. So, my first question is, how would someone know how to get Ryan White services? Okay. Like some of the services, for instance, I know how to go to a case manager and get a deeper grant. I know how to call Temple and get an appointment for dental. But suppose like somebody needed the, they needed to use the Ryan White. But first of all, they would have to get a case manager first to get a Ryan White card in order to get the services. Am I correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. So, okay. The reason why I'm asking this question is because I've had an instance where someone called and they wanted to make an appointment with a doctor. They needed Suboxone and they didn't have insurance. So my thing, what I have to do for my agency is get them an appointment. And then we try to take them to the benefits coordinator to get them insurance. But would it have been possible for her, the person, to get Suboxone under Ryan White?
Okay, the silence that you are hearing is that we are probably trying to think
through. I understand it. I truly understand it. The question is, if a person, well, first of all.
I mean, I would say the short answer is yes. And if we think about what we talked about today, right? That one, medication-assisted treatment is payable under a couple different service categories, right? And substance use treatment under Ryan White's one, as well as I would believe this would also be covered under the local pharmaceutical if it was like a short term or DFA short term, right? Just until someone, your benefits coordinator could get this person insured.
Right, right. Because the person is positive. So
right, that was my next question. So if
the person is definitely, the person is positive. So if I sent the person to the clinic because we, for my organization, we are told we don't turn anybody away. So I sent them to the clinic for an appointment. Now, when I asked a question earlier about the 14-day supply.
Right.
Because, see, I know that for my organization, sometimes it takes a month to 6 weeks for them to get an appointment.
Right.
You know, so I was just wondering if they would be able to get another 14-day supply if they needed it. That's why I asked that question. Now, that, for instance, okay, but like I said, the person that's living with HIV has to get a case manager in order to get a Ryan White card.
Right, they have to go through the certification process. That's a HRSA requirement.
They have to call ACO and be hooked up with a case manager, right? And sometimes that can take time too.
Yes.
Okay. So now, okay, so that's a scenario. So let's say they have a case manager, they have a up-to-date Ryan White card, right? And so if they needed some other type of services, but say they don't have insurance.
Right.
Would they, okay, because Ryan White is the last resort.
Right.
So the first thing we would try to do is to get that person to a benefits coordinator to have them apply for insurance, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, that can take up to 45 days.
Right.
So therefore, we would go, the case manager should be educated in how to get other Ryan White services, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yes. In the interim, someone should... in the interim, someone should actually be able to access all of these other services that are funded under Ryan White. So if a client actually needed the service, let's say your medical visit, and for whatever reason you were able to do that within, you know, 2 weeks, that would be paid for under Ryan White completely, because at the time of the appointment, the person is uninsured.
Okay. Okay. All right. Mara, you see that question in there? Or what?
And I'll add to just to Dina, just to your scenario as well, is that obviously a person has to have a script to get medication, right?
Right. So, yeah.
So if that person has a script, then yes, they should be able to. I hear what you're saying about a follow-up appointment or whatever, but if they have that script, then yes, if they need it, if that 14-day supply isn't going to get them through to whatever, then yes. And also SBBP and ADAP is another option, right, for meds, right? Because if you...
But you got to apply for those. You got to...
Right, but they have a couple day turnaround. So that's my point. Like, it's not, you know, insurance, right, can take, you know, a month or two, as we all know. But like the SBBP can be a week or less. So...
Can I chime in on this real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. With SBBP, first of all, you can in fact get a Ryan White card if you go to any Ryan White provider. You can just bring in your documents, you don't need a case manager, and you can get a card. So you don't need to, you know, wait to get a Ryan White certification. And then, that's really what I wanted to say, because I don't know why someone, you don't need a case manager to get SBBP. You do not. You can do it on
No, we didn't say that. We didn't say that.
That's what I thought.
You got to apply for it. No. You have to apply for it.
You have to apply for it. But you don't need a case manager to apply for SBBP.
We know that part. I got that part.
All right. As long as we're...
Yeah, but now, wait a minute. Keep hold on. Now, you said they have to bring in documentation. What documentation? What they have to bring in the...
Driver's license, Social Security card, proof of address. You need your award letter from... if you get Social Security or disability.
Okay, but suppose they don't get any of that, Keith.
Then they don't have it to supply.
Exactly.
Then what they do is, for proof of verification of income, you have to have like 13 pay stubs. And then you can have a bill. You can do pay stubs. They want to see what your income is over time so they can estimate.
Okay, Keith, some of the people that I deal with don't have the job.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to chime in like that, but stop.
Well, come on, let's help.
Or you can, as a case manager or a person working for an agency, you can write the letter for them and send it in.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, so
can I just interrupt for a moment, please?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, because this is a bigger conversation, and I think we can help Dina get hooked up with someone who can answer all these questions, because they're important.
I love you, Dina.
I love you. I need help. I mean, it's very important, so I'm not trying to say we don't want to help.
Because I'm working from home and I'm getting these phone calls, and I can't get in touch with people. I need to know how to help people.
Right. You know?
I know.
Let's make sure that Dina, when we sign off, if you have a minute, you can stick on the call, and Mari and I can help.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Because I want to make sure that if other people have questions.
Yeah. There's one in there.
So the one thing I do want to say, which I don't know if it was clear, so I want to be clear now, is that also the healthcare services that are covered under Ryan White are specific to HIV and related things. If I stub my toe, like, that isn't necessarily going to be covered under the Ryan White program, or if there's some other health conditions.
You're
going to
be all right.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, that's a little silly of an example, but I hope you'll indulge me. And so I think that there sometimes is confusion around, because Ryan White is not insurance, right? That's a very important distinction that can be confusing, and I understand why it is confusing. But programs are funded to provide specific services to people living with HIV, and that does not include all, you know, related medical care you know, not all possible medical care, I should say. And so sometimes it can seem, you know, arbitrary or whatever, but there's specific reasons for that. And so it's not like insurance in the way that if I need to then see specialist A, B, or C, you know, that may not be, like, referrals can always happen. So a referral is different than, you know, having the service provided. So I think sometimes this is not my area of expertise, so I'm not going to speak any more on it, but I just wanted to clarify that and maybe some folks who work in medical settings could speak more to that. But I think that is an important distinction to make. And thank you. And so Tahara is putting the ACO client services unit number in the chat box for everyone, which is important. And I should have thought to put it in there. So like all access connected to services, if anyone needs to access services or you have questions, to call 215-985-2437. And they're open from 9 to 4. That number is also on our website in a few places if you don't write it down. But that's a great place to go to ask any questions about Ryan White services, whether you are a client or not. Yeah. And that way, if there's specific questions, you know, per a client, they might be able to help you, Dina, like navigate through what. And thank you. Those are the COVID hours. Thank you. That's important. So they're still there, still working hard to make sure people access services. But are there some other questions or comments? I'm going to take that as silence is assent. So just as we part, there'll be a few more things. My email address is on here. You can feel free to email me. If you can also always email info@hivphilly.org, and that actually goes straight to Mari. And you can do that through our website if you forget my email. You can sign up for the office newsletter via our website, which is hivphilly.org is our website. And these recordings will eventually be up there, but I'm going to post them to Facebook as soon as I get the recordings back from Zoom. So it'll be on there. You can share them. As well as always, those are a good way. Facebook is a good way to keep up on the meetings. But we will, if you sign up for our newsletter, that's going to be a really good way in these COVID times to know when a meeting's going to happen or a training's going to happen, because unfortunately we're not at the office, so you can't call us to ask us questions. So we're going to make sure that we send out information as much as possible that way. But you can always feel free to email anyone on staff. It's our first name @hivphilly.org. It's pretty easy. Mari, I don't know if you have any things you want to say to wrap us up.
No, I mean, I think that the only thing that I would add is that moving forward, the things that you all need for us to provide you with in order to support you as we move towards allocations, please don't hesitate to either ask or send us an email so that we can try and address those needs, whether it's one-on-one or whether or not it's through a training. And the other part is we are going to start trying to get the usual materials and some other things out to you as soon as we possibly can. And as Nicole said at the beginning, there are people who are also working from home at the state level. So some of the access to information we don't necessarily have. I am going through the various websites, et cetera, federal websites to download information. And I'm talking to our partners at the health departments. And by that, I mean the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia, and the state of New Jersey, to try and make sure that we have the additional information. But if it's not available, trust me, it's not for the lack of us trying to get it to you. If you have any questions for me, please feel free. And that's about it.
All right, well, I'm going to stop recording now. So